feet. Knocks off number one Indiana.
Brent Spillane continues to be the hottest thing in college baseball.
The Illini win it over Ohio State 28-21 at the Horseshoe in Columbus.
Darren for the tie. He got it.
Oh,
he got it. 80-80.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Oski Talk. My name's Anthony Pasquale with the great Patrick Catazone, and today we get to recap an Illini roadkill against Purdue.
Yeah, it's a small dig right there, just because I predicted Illinois to lose to Purdue at Mackey Arena, but you know, that's just it. Mackey Arena is one of the hardest places to play in the Big Ten, and the Illini proved to them, you know, to the Big Ten, national media, that they are a legit team with this win, that they can win on the road, more importantly, and that they can be a number one or two team in the Big Ten.
Yeah, that was actually something Dave Fleming asked Dan Dockich. He said, is it crazy to think Illinois can win the Big Ten? And Dockich said no. And first of all, I want to say Dockich.
Yeah, let's sidebar this.
Yeah, I mean,
Dan Dockich was awful last night. He was terrible,
dude,
man.
But whatever he says, it always works for us. We end up winning whenever he's on the call. Speaking of which, we also end up winning every game against Purdue and Wisconsin since Stephen Cohn left.
Yeah.
So, Little thanks to Steven if you're listening. But yeah, back to the game. Huge win for Illinois. Very impressive showing on the road at a really tough place to play. I think they didn't only show the Big Ten, but they showed national media how real this Illini team is. It's not like they just squeaked by Purdue. They won by 17 points. It almost looks like they're going to extend it to past 20. So huge win for Illinois. Great showing. And it wasn't just led by the front court or the back court. They were both really good.
Yeah, I think the people who are in the national media that are really, I don't want to say smart, but kind of get game to game and advanced analytics can say, you know, Illinois has these really good wins at home and away, Rutgers, Purdue, the most recent two, that they should be, you know, in a good seating for this tournament. And there's some guys like, I don't know if you checked, Joe Nardi had the Illini as a 9 seed.
Yeah.
Playing an 8 seed Marquette. Like, that's ridiculous. So I mean, you know, the guys that have known Illinois is going to be good, have like truly looked at his teams. I don't think Lenardi really pays that close attention team to team. I think he looks more at rankings and power rankings. But the guys who look team to team, this Illini team looks good.
Yeah, they look like a team that will most likely be playing a higher seed in the tournament, if that makes sense. Like, they're not going to be a 9 or a 10 or an 11.
Right.
They might be like a 5, a 6, or a 7, which
would be...
A 5 might be a little generous, but yeah. You get what I'm saying, that they're going to be...
A 6 seed, I think, is accurate for this team.
Yeah,
right now.
I think that'd be a great thing, you know,
yeah.
Compared to last year not even getting in.
Right.
They already beat their win total from last year.
Right, they're winning games, too, that last year they would have been close losses.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we said at the beginning of the year. If they could just turn some of those close losses into wins, this team will look really good. And
yeah.
And then you get a game like this where you run the trains against Purdue and you end up winning by 17 and really showing up. So huge win for Illinois. Love what I saw. What were you looking at with the backcourt or
yeah.
front court?
Yeah, I'll get into that real quick. I just want to do another sidebar too, just to like correct myself a little bit. With the Joe Lenardi thing, personally, I'm not trying to call him out on the podcast, but I truly think he only bases his bracketology on RPI, in which case Illinois is around the 40 range in RPI, which is fine. That's one way of indexing, but like KenPom has his 22. So that's where my criticism of him comes in. Just want to correct that real quick.
Yeah,
but
Joe,
let's get into
no
the game.
Bad blood. We yeah. love all the work you do.
Yeah, exactly. I met him at the State Farm Classic a couple years ago. He's a really nice guy. Back to it. The front court dominated.
Yeah.
Kofi, Georgie were great. You know, Georgie
was okay.
Oh, okay. But
still needed a little bit more out of him.
He's used in this offense as kind of a distraction because Kofi's that good.
Yeah.
You know,
but
you
I mean,
get
he
it
can
out
make
the
plays
lane,
when he needs to.
Exactly. And you know, some games like the Rutgers games aren't going to look good for him, but you know, he's still a needed part to this offense and to this team.
Right.
They dominated twice. Harms was not a non-factor because Kofi Coburn's that good. They
yeah.
have to switch him to a, you know, yeah, you really can't cover Coburn. You have to switch around players to try and find the one who can, and Purdue really could never seem to find that formula. And he just dominated. Twice in a row, he dominated Purdue
yeah, and,
at home and away.
And he did it this game with Georgie in a little bit of foul trouble. You could tell there was one point in the game, second half, Brad took out Kofi. You could tell he wanted to give him a little break. Georgie picked up a pretty bad third foul. Kofi was right back in there, and he blocked a shot and then had a couple of huge dunks. He ended up with 22 points and 15 rebounds. Those were the numbers he was putting up against the non-conference team. When we previewed this game, I said those were the type of numbers I wanted to start seeing him put up again, and he did. But you mentioned the front court. I want to talk about the back court a little bit. Io and Trent were unreal in this game. I don't think we've ever seen Io facilitate as well as he did yesterday. Not only did he pick up 18 points, but he had 11 assists. You don't see that out of him that much.
Yeah. No, you really don't. Was that his first career double-double? I don't think so. I think he was third or second.
I think it was his first career 10-plus assist game.
Right.
So he might have had double-double with points and rebounds.
Regardless, he was great. The thing about Io, the last couple games that have made him great, is that he might have a bad first half, but his second halves are always electric. You know,
and in the closing seconds, he's knocking down free throws. He's making shots.
The last 5 minutes of the game, Io shines. He truly is the guy that we piped him up a little bit in that last podcast, but truly he's the guy in those last couple of minutes. You could give the ball and you could expect points. Illinois has been doing a good job getting to the free throw line.
And making the free throws.
And making the free throws. I think we went 18 for 19 last night.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
That's stellar. The three-point shooting is great. I mean, Trent Frazier, you wish you could have that every night. You're not going to get it every night, but... You know,
but I mean,
we needed it, but if he only makes three of those a night, like that's the consistency that we need out of Trent.
Yeah. And that's what I was saying before the game. And I actually texted you during the game, you know, like last game, it seemed like that was going to be the Trent Frazier game. I don't know if we could call this the Trent Frazier game because of how complete everybody else played,
right.
But he was really good. 21 points for a guy that was, as Dave Fleming and Dan Dockage continually pointed out, came into the game as a 37% shooter on the year. He's much better than that, and now it seems like he's kind of hitting his stride a little bit, which is nice to see.
Right. I mean, 2 weeks in a row, I wanted the lead to be this was the Trent Frazier game or something like that. But the second half, Io performances have completely taken that option away because he's been so good in the second half that I can't call it the Trent Frazier game because Io also scored either more points because of his second half performance or is the critical guy down the stretch, right? So, look, production all around. Everyone was firing on all cylinders last night. It was as close to a perfect game, I think, is what Underwood said.
Yeah.
And
that was just being down at halftime, too.
Right.
And the other thing I want to say is, those great games from Io and Trent are with a pretty heavy workload. Frazier had to play 34 minutes, and Io had to play 37 because Alan Griffin got ejected from the game very early.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. I just called it a freshman move.
He's not a freshman.
He's not a freshman. He can't make that move. It's a petty one, you know.
And you can tell... There was, like, intent to do it, but not intent to hurt. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because he didn't, like, step on him. He just kind of put a little bit of, like,
pressure.
And for those of you listening who don't know, after a pretty physical play down low that I believe Griffin either got the rebound and got fouled or put back and scored, he actually stepped on – was it?
Stavansky.
Yeah. And
Sasha.
Yeah. Stepped on him and, like, pushed off of him. And obviously you can't do that.
You can't.
It wasn't as bad physically as it could have been, but it's such a bad look for this team and this university. And we're actually talking to one of our buddies, Alec, today, and he brought up a good point. If the whole Kansas State, Kansas fight didn't break out and take up all the attention of negative college basketball media there was for a night,
right.
Alan Griffin and the Illini would look a lot worse to the cameras than they do right now.
Yeah, and you know, I was watching ESPN last night. You watch it, and their highlights were just the one clip they had from the game was the Alan Griffin move, which infuriated me because there was much more play to this.
A bigger
this
story
game
to tell
than just that incident. You know, they show like Illinois playing Purdue up eight to nothing, and then this happens. Alan Griffin steps them, but they ended up winning anyways. Whatever. I was like, that was ridiculous. Come on, ESPN. There was more to the game than that. This is a huge win for Illinois. Like you can't just sidestep it like they did.
One of the bigger college basketball media personalities, I can't remember who, maybe Seth Greenberg, I'm not positive, but somebody tweeted and said, win of the night, without a doubt, the Illini.
Oh, I think it's John Rothstein.
Oh, maybe it was him. I think you're right.
Yeah, love that guy. Yeah, Alan Griffin, look, I mean, his dad's going to chew him out. His dad's an assistant at Toronto.
Yeah.
His dad's going to call him out for it. I'm sure his brother's going to call him out for it, playing Duke next year. Mm-hmm. You know, Underwood wasn't even going to deal with it.
Yeah, Underwood didn't argue. He was like, get out, yeah, you know?
Come on, guy.
But here's the question. I don't know if the Big Ten's going to do any type of suspension or if the NCAA will, but I think if you're Underwood, you kind of have to, right? Yeah. Maybe a game or two, three games.
I think you don't announce it to the media. I don't think you say anything to the media, and you just let it play out. No comment the whole week, and just not play Griffin in the Michigan game. Then he's back. Look, yeah, it's unsportsmanlike, but the bigger deal for Underwood is that he let his team down in potentially one of the top five most important games of the year.
And here's another thing.
That's the bigger deal in my eyes. No, he let his team down. And you know, he let his, you know, the community down. He let, you know, players down. You know, Sasha gets, you know, hurt. Like him,
that'd be bad.
Right, but it's bad. But letting your teammates down is way worse.
Yeah, and Griffin, I think, understands that. Like, I think having to sit in the locker room and watch his team grind out that win and play so well was almost punishment enough. Like, I think behavior will not happen like that again.
It was a selfish move, is I think what it really comes down to. And petty, too, obviously. That's the sportsman aspect to it. But you're playing in Mackey Arena, you're getting screamed at by a million Purdue fans. It's going to be a physical game. Like, come on. The Griffin incident isn't, like, the most out-of-the-world thing you could expect.
Yeah, that's also true. And here's the other thing. I saw some people on Twitter saying, like, well, the Illini need someone to play with an edge. That's not playing with an edge. That's stupid.
That was dumb.
But he usually does play with that edge.
Yeah, right. He does. And you know, sometimes it gets to you. It goes overboard. And that's what happened. And like I said, it's a petty move. Obviously, it's unacceptable. But, you know, the responsibility he should have on himself to feel bad that, wow, I let my teammates down. Yeah. That should hurt more than, you know, like, oh, I'm just a petty player. Because he'll never do that again. Right. I don't think he really,
no way.
In the moment caught up to him a little bit. But, you know, when you take yourself out of it, you're like, oh, man, that was just, I'm just, feel bad. You apologize to him after the game.
And I don't think.
What more can you ask?
I think the next time Alan Griffin meets the media, there's going to be another type of apology about it, too.
Mm-hmm.
More so to the teammates and fans. Like, I think he already apologized to the Purdue player, to Purdue, all that, mm-hmm. and probably to his team in the locker room. But there's got to be some type of public part of it, right. I think, too.
And if you've ever been I don't know, I don't think you have, a basketball presser, Alan's just very well spoken and knows how to step up and claim responsibility for things. I mean, in the beginning of the year, we were talking about how terrible his rebounding was, and he owned up to it right away. You know, rebounding last year was bad. Now, you know, my defense has stepped up. I expect the exact same thing from Alan Griffin. It's a bummer that this is going to go against his character, because I think Alan Griffin is a good character.
Me too.
But, you know, that's the way it happens. The moment sometimes catches up to you.
And with him or without him, the Illini, ranked 21st now in the country, are going to be playing again this week, Saturday, at Michigan. They played Michigan at home this year before they were ranked. Michigan is actually top five in the country at the time. Now they're not ranked. Kind of a little turn of the tables. Illinois beat them 71-62 last time they played. This time, it's in Michigan. A much harder game for the Illini, but I think still winnable.
Yeah, I'm going to go with you. I actually think this one's more winnable. You look at that last game against Michigan, Coburn dominated Teske. Wagner has actually improved, I think, in the Big Ten play since we played him last. So he might be a surprise guy to have a big effect on this game. But, I don't think Xavier Simpson is a Trey Burke, per se, that Michigan needed to, bring him back to a national championship this year. He's just not that good. And I think, you look at this team, the size advantage as well, or at least matching some of that size with Teske and Wagner, Illinois matches up really well against Michigan.
Yeah, I agree. I think the keys to this game are going to be Trent and Georgie, because I think you know what you're getting at this point from Io and Kofi. You know what I mean? I think Trent's got to make a couple of threes, and Georgie has to show up a little bit offensively, because down low, Michigan is much bigger and much more talented than Purdue, in my opinion, because they've got two bigs, you know, Teske and Wagner, or however you say it. And they also have a guard that I think Frazier will probably draw the matchup of guarding with Simpson. But, I mean, we'll see how it goes. Obviously, this matchup played in Illinois' favor last time, and then obviously Michigan remembers that, so they're going to have a little chip on their shoulder. But I think Illinois has proved themselves as one of the contenders in the Big Ten, almost more so than Michigan has this year. So I think this has all the makings to be like one of those classic games that really puts Illinois on the map.
Yeah, it's an 11 o'clock game, which is kind of fun. I like the Saturday 11 o'clock games. They really make or break your day, though.
True.
That's the bottom of the Mizzou game. I was like, early morning win, like, you know, the rest of the day will be great, and we lost. And it was like, I just couldn't stand thinking about it so much. But 11 o'clock game will be nice. Like I said, I like your point too. I will say this. I think the make or break in this one is, can Trent hit threes like he did against Purdue? If he could produce four or five threes in this game, shoot, I don't know. How much can you ask, really? 70% from three and take seven shots like he did the other night, or you know, 60% from three. We'll win this game, but if Trent can't produce again, and at times this year he's been missing on this team, I mean, during the stretch he's been
really
incredible.
Good. Yeah.
You know, ball hawk in every game this season on defense, but offensively he has struggled a little bit. It, you know, you can't deny it, but if he steps up tonight, or excuse me, on Saturday, Illini will win.
Yeah, and I also think, like I said, you need something like that out of Georgie. We've seen last year the way he can kind of take over a game. And can you imagine if he's that hot with Coburn down low? Like, I mean, they could do a ton of stuff offensively, open up a lot of doors. But Georgie's just been kind of missing that. I think part of it is he hasn't been relied on to do it. He kind of has been knowing his role and accepting it, kind of taking a step back.
That's exactly where it
is. Which is what Trent did earlier this year, too, where he was more defensive and more facilitating. But now they need a score, and he's kind of stepped up. I think Georgie might have a little bit of a flip like Trent did, too, and I think this would be a good game to do it.
Yeah, and to the evolution of, you know, you might as well say this, you probably should have started with it, but Underwood's evolution of defense and not pressing as much. I don't know if you read that article today about how he is completely redone his defense and offense as well to maybe score less points and not blow out guys, but they're committing in the past too many turnovers because of it, and what else were they doing? I was trying to think of they're fouling too much as well, and how that's really digressed since he's shaking up the defense, and you know, the pivotal player when you think of that is Trent Frazier.
Yeah, and he was the guy that was very offensive when Underwood first got here and is now taking a full kind of change of pace and really making himself a very well-rounded, complete player. So, I mean, Trent has matured a lot, I think, is the best way you could say it.
Now I think you could officially say Trent will go down as an all-time Illini for a lot of fans.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, for me, he's like the Rizzo of the Cubs rebuild.
Now he was there. Now he is.
He was there when it was bad. Now he's part of it when it's good.
Right, and the maturity level is there now where you can say, yeah, like, that guy's an Illini. Like, there's some guys can't say, you know, that just weren't Illini, didn't have the breathe. They didn't breathe Illini. You know, guys like Malcolm Hill did. I think Trent Frazier's there or almost there.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of players on this team that do. Georgie does. Io does. Exactly. In his blood. So having all those guys that so many fans can relate with and be like, yeah, I'm proud to be an Illini fan because that guy and that guy and that guy really makes for a team that can also, in the tournament, gain the viewing and the rooting from other fans. You know what I mean?
Like
a team that can, like the type of Cinderella story that these guys are so easy to root for is the main point I'm getting to.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, take the Allen thing out, then they're even more easy to root for. But yeah, absolutely.
Before we go, let's get into some score predictions. I'll lead off this time because I know you went first last time. I do think Illinois wins this game. I don't think it's going to be by 9 or 11 like they did last time. It's going to be closer. I think Illinois wins a little bit high scoring, 75-71.
75-71, I like that score. I don't want to match you up exactly, but I'll say I think the 70 range is right where I like it. Illini winning this one.
Okay.
I know.
Yeah.
73-68. I actually think they'll handle Michigan fairly well. The Trent versus Xavier Simpson is going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, so, I think so too.
This is just going to be a really fun game to watch. I'm excited.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. The next time we'll be talking to you guys will be after that game for a little recap. But for now, for Patrick Catazone, I'm Anthony Pasquale. ILL.
I and I.